Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex, and my suspicious circuits are tingling with suspicion that we have landed at episode number 108. Please, have a jelly baby, but don't forget to brush your teeth. I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
How are you guys?
Pretty good. Feeling a little under the weather this week, but pretty good. Part of the reason I missed Friday Night Who.
I thought you were just too tired.
You went home and took a nap.
I did, because I was exhausted, and I thought, you know what? This cold started coming on Friday. Actually, yeah, Friday afternoon. And it wasn't, I mean, it's never been that full-blown cold or flu, thank goodness, which is going all over the place, but I've been on the verge of having something for a while, and then it kind of materialized itself over the weekend. Sorry, I got the crackles back. It is you.
Really?
Yeah. It must be that cord.
Hmm.
It's fine now. Leave it alone.
Hang on. Is it better now?
Anyway, so I was feeling a bit under the weather. Anyway, and I just, as the night progressed, I was just getting...
It smells like beer.
More and more.
What'd you do to it?
More and more exhausted. And so I went home and I thought, well, I'll get an hour nap in, maybe 45 minutes. That was it.
The ironic thing is, we started like 5 minutes late because of a surprise Sean and Mel had for their new place, which I won't spoil for you in your telling.
You have a surprise at your place?
The new edition.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
did Mel finally have the baby?
Yes.
Cool. Congratulations.
It looks like the V-baby.
Where are the cigars?
It's got the lizard tongue and the scales.
So we started 5 minutes late, and right as we're starting, we're like, I guess Glenn's not going to make it. And then you popped up on Xbox.
Oh, that was probably Karen. Or not Karen. Caitlin. No? Yeah, probably was Caitlin.
Do you need more room?
No, actually, you know what?
Yes.
That was Holly because she started watching Downton Abbey.
Oh.
I bet that was her getting on Netflix.
Downtown Abbey.
So, yep. No, I was dead to the world Friday night, so.
Well, how was the rest of your weekend?
I saw your tweet and I was like, he ain't coming.
Pretty good. Caitlin had another basketball game and they lost again, but they was within 10 points this time, so
ooh,
it was much better.
Good.
Yeah, much better game and the girls were clicking and getting a lot better and. My sister's birthday was tonight, so we went over and had cake and
Happy
ice cream.
To your sister.
Yeah,
yes.
Cake and ice cream and lasagna for dinner. Mm. That was pretty much it. We didn't do a lot this weekend.
Looked like some Disney Yahtzee.
We did. We played Disney Yahtzee, and Caitlin's been sick too. She's been not feeling well, so both her and I have been. Yeah, that was it. There wasn't nothing real exciting this week, so.
You stop pointing at the microphone.
It keeps crackling.
It's because you play with it.
Sean, how was your weekend?
My week was pretty all right. School started this week, so that was an adjustment. I'm trying to decide if my new public speaking class is best or worst ever.
Are you doing this online again?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually attending class. Here's the odd thing, though.
What is it?
Public speaking.
Public speaking.
I have yet to attend a public speaking class.
Why?
Well, admittedly, I was a little late the first day, which was Tuesday, because I wasn't used to the schedule, and I had everything lined up and ready, had my books set, had everything laid out, and just this nagging feeling in the back of my head as I went to bed that night. When I got up the next morning, I realized that the nagging feeling in the back of my head was that I'd forgotten a class when I was writing my schedule down. And sure enough, public speaking at 9:30, not 11, like I thought. So,
So you were quite late.
By the time I found a parking space and got to where the class I thought was, it was about 10. So I was about a half hour late. Well, being the first day of the first week of the first new class, he apparently laid out the, yeah, this is what we're going to do. Dismissed. And everybody was gone. So I missed him by like 5 seconds.
Wow.
I mean, literally, like they were gone. I was like, oh, okay. So, I resolved Thursday to be better, and I'm going to make sure that I'm there. So I get there, and I'm early, and the classroom's deserted. The lights are off. There's nobody there, and I'm like, something's not right. So I went and checked with the office, which was just down the way, for the communications department. I'm like, that class is in this room, right? She goes, yeah. I says, 9:30, right? She goes, yeah. I was like, okay. And then she comes out and finds me in the classroom sitting in the dark. She goes, but not today. I'm like, what? Yeah, apparently the
she
guy,
couldn't have added that when you were talking to her?
She had to double check. Apparently the professor was out of town on a debate trip.
Oh.
So there was no class to. He probably mentioned that on the first day, but I didn't hear it. So I had a text mail afterwards, and it was like, this is either the best or worst class ever. I'm not sure yet. Got a whole weekend.
Well, considering you haven't had any homework either, then.
Yeah, no homework yet, which is great. And then I've also got physics, and I've got digital filmmaking, and I've got that other one. French 2. Electric Boogaloo.
Oh.
But in Francais, we say Electronic Boogaloo. I can't.
I'm sure that's not it.
Anyway, so that went over really well. And I've kind of been on a science fiction tear this week. I watched 3 movies.
Ooh.
What'd you watch?
I watched Looper on Keith's recommendation,
which
is phenomenal.
No spoilers, because now Glenn has the copy.
Yep.
Oh, no spoilers.
It's in my position now.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt is really great, and it's definitely a thinking man's science fiction movie, and I will look forward to what you think of it, because I liked it. You'll probably hate it, but...
Probably, because we don't share a lot of tastes in movies.
And then, we got on Netflix and watched Lockout with Guy Pearce.
And Maggie Grace.
And Maggie... Yeah. And Peter Stormare, if we're going to do
this.
Oh,
wow.
And it is a colossal piece of crap. And I loved every single minute of it. I mean, you know, it's this fusion between Escape from New York and Fortress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you've seen the movie now.
Right,
you're done.
Right.
I didn't care. Guy Pearce is so much fun, and he's sarcastic and mean and just a lot of fun to watch. And it's just one of those that you sit there and you start laughing. Once you start laughing, it's not meant to be a funny movie,
right,
but it is.
Right.
Once you start laughing, you can't stop. And they totally pegged that this is where we're going with it, you know, kind of mentality.
You told me on Friday to fast track it on my Netflix queue.
Yeah.
It's going to have to wait because I picked up Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter from the library.
See, Will wasn't impressed with that.
I only have 3 days to watch it, so I got to.
Yeah, well, I guess you can fast track.
There's a deadline.
But, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It was really, really, really fun. I mean, just dumb action movie. So,
yeah.
And then today we watched the new Total Recall, which was worthwhile. I mean, it's not Recall. It's not. I think it would have done better had they not called it Total Recall. If they'd actually called it, you know, We Can Remember It For You Wholesale or something. I don't know how much closer it is to the book than the Arnold movie. There's just enough there that it's kind of sort of still Recall. But it's a completely... I mean, it's the nugget of the story. The guy's got the submerged memories and goes to Recall to become a spy and have a new set of memories implanted. And they find out he's already a spy. And, you know, mass chaos breaks out. And I feel a little weird because I have a tendency to really like movies that Colin Farrell is in. But I don't like Colin Farrell. So it's a little odd there. But he was okay in it. But yeah, the movie itself was I thought, pretty cool. But it's just, don't go into it expecting that it's a remake of Total Recall, because it's a different tack with it all. I mean, there's no Mars at all, which I was not expecting. I was kind of like, when are we getting to Mars, man?
Yeah. Huh.
So it's worth a watch.
So he doesn't pick red skies over Mars.
He doesn't pick red skies over Mars. So we, you know, had those, and I felt accomplished, because, you know, and yeah, eventually I'll add those to my list of things to add up to the website and get reviews done. And theoretically, since tomorrow's a holiday, we might be going to see The Hobbit.
Ooh.
So, knock on wood. But that's it. How about you? What did you do?
Because you don't have school tomorrow, then.
I don't have school.
Cool.
No, I only have class on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Oh, at all?
Nice. At all.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
So.
And so Mel's off.
Mel's off tomorrow, so that's why we're doing that. Oh, and I might have been hired today.
Ooh.
Oh, where at?
Student Media. I'll be working for the news.
You're so excited about this.
Yeah, I'll be doing some videography and duties for the Washington Review Online.
Oh. It's college news.
College news, yeah. Not the same.
Don't worry about that.
Not the same, Glenn.
Not the same.
But they might also have me be an on-air radio personality for Tribods.
Oh, fun.
Or AirBods, pardon me. And then possibly writing reviews for the paper as well. So
oh.
I don't know yet. I don't know if I get paid for all 3 jobs or not, but
Cool.
I don't know if I get paid for one job yet, but that's why I say I might have been hired.
Very cool.
I'm sorry, what'd you do?
We didn't really do much. Went and played with the nephew a little bit on Saturday afternoon before we went and had dinner with our friend Blake for his birthday. So that was pretty fun, but Sarah caught something during that and didn't feel too well today, so we stayed home and didn't really do a whole lot. Over on Friday, Sarah and her mom went out to the mall, who was having a sidewalk sale, and they picked up some minifigures.
Which, who at the mall has minifigs?
Hot Topic.
Really?
Slightly overpriced, but they're there.
Okay, then.
You're better off going to Vintage Stock.
Gotcha.
Which has them, too.
I didn't know Vintage Stock had them, either.
And they had one action figure when we went there on Saturday.
Who'd they have?
Idris. And I almost got it, but I didn't like her face. It didn't look good. It just wasn't a good sculpture.
Well, I wouldn't buy one either, but it didn't look good. So,
the dress looked great, but the face was just not quite. But we got the 11th Doctor in his green coat.
So many of our relationships are right in there. And then I got to her face.
We got a couple more Ouds, Madame Kevorkian, as we like to call her, and another second doctor, 11th Doctor with his green coat, and two Amys with hash marks on her.
I couldn't figure out what the heck they were. What's on her face?
And Sarah's mom was very sweet and bought me a t-shirt that won't fit, and I have to return. But it's 11, and underneath it says bow ties are cool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's neat.
Because they have a decent amount of Who merchandise, actually.
I haven't been in there in a while.
That was our week.
Cool.
News.
Galley guests. Sad news, actually.
Mm.
Sean, you want to break that news?
Yeah, thanks for throwing that in my lap since I wasn't ready.
Well, you just have to say what the bad news is.
Yeah, Galley.
I've got the good news.
You've got the good news ready. I see how this works.
You're
I announce that I'm into news, and immediately I have to be a 10 o'clock person. Galley Frey 1 has announced. What?
Nothing.
Don't shake your head at me like you don't know what I'm talking about. You little black rain cloud, you. Galley has announced. Where did it go? I have problems reading, apparently. Where is...
I have it. Would you like me to take
it? Go for it, Glenn.
All right.
Take the
bad news. Unfortunately, late Thursday night, they found out that Arthur Darvill is not going to be at Gallifrey this year.
This year.
He's not going to be there this week either.
If it was this week, he'd be able to go.
Yeah.
I'm not ready.
Unfortunately, for the dates that he's going to be there, he had a shooting schedule planned. And for 2 weeks after Galley. And what happened was they moved that shooting schedule up 2 weeks. So now he's not going to be able to attend. So, fortunately, they have added some guests.
Do you want to throw the other piece of bad news in there?
Let's throw the other bad, because we didn't get that last week.
Because
that came down Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
Carol Ann Ford has withdrawn.
Which,
for personal reasons.
Unfortunately.
So, I hope that's not what I think maybe it might mean.
Unfortunately, you guys might be surprised, but I'm a little more heartbroken over the fact that she's not going to be there than Arthur Darvill.
I'm not surprised by that.
I mean, it's just... the cool
There's a
thing
better
was,
chance of seeing Arthur Darvill again.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And let's face it, Caroline's getting up there in years, and...
That's why I hope personal reasons isn't what...
Yeah, and so I'd always thought it would be really cool to have... I've got Ian's autograph from last year, which Sean brought back for me. And I thought it'd be cool to have then Susan. Yeah, but alas, it's what happened.
I don't mean to besmirch any of the guests that Galley brings in, because I'm thrilled and excited to go, and I'm thrilled and excited to meet and get autographs from these people that are going to be attending. But the loss of both Susan and Rory really almost feels like I guess I'll still go. I mean, it's
Prima.
I know.
And Sylvester.
Sylvester McCoy's going to be there. But just for some reason.
Sylvester who?
Just a little known guy.
I just liked it. I just liked the chide. It's one of his favorites.
Anyway, for some reason, the loss of Susan and Rory is really, really sticking in my craw this week. I was just going, oh, man.
But they did announce another classic companion to replace
Carol
Ann Ford.
They did.
Deborah Watling.
Victoria is going to be there.
Victoria is coming back.
Yay.
Who we've seen in The Ice Warriors.
We have, yes.
And I think that's about it.
And Tomb of the Cybermen. Lynn reminded me of that earlier.
Yes.
Oh, that is her Tomb of the Cybermen. Yeah. You're right.
That was like her second story.
Yeah, that was so long ago.
Yeah.
We need to put that back on the schedule.
There's a special edition out now.
Give me you run right out and
buy
it.
Give me a reason to go buy it.
You run right out and buy it. I'll put it on the schedule. Again. I almost feel like we should start re-reviewing some of those early ones now that we kind of sort of know what we're doing.
Why not?
We're not trying to cram five episodes into a
In addition to Deborah, they added Dick Mills, who's one of the BBC Radiophonic Workshop.
Now, I have to say this. I told Mel that. I was like, but Dick Mills is going to be there. She was not impressed at all. She was like, yeah, like I care. And I was like, now, admittedly, this is not an individual that I'm going to run up to and go, dude, can I get your autograph? But I think it's an impressive resume.
A panel would be interesting to sit in on.
The dude, for those who don't know, Dick Mills was responsible for the sound effects on Doctor Who from like 1970 till the show went on hiatus. I mean, he's got a huge chunk of episodes that any sound effect, anytime a button was pushed, anytime a monster roared, anytime a ray gun went off, that guy was behind it. That's kind of that's a huge chunk of work. So
I'm glad you're excited.
I have a lot of respect for the guy.
Maybe that's the word. Admiration, respect, sure. It's not,
I wouldn't get his autograph. To listen to him on a panel. Yes. I'd like to hear from him. So
maybe we could interview him.
Maybe
he talks like, who's the guy in the Police Academy. That's just all he does. And sure.
Who is that guy? What's his real name? He's Jonesy in Police Academy. What is his name?
In Spaceballs.
Keith's going to the...
Yes. I'm going to the...
He's going into the... We shouldn't have started that.
Hang on.
You're going to be thankful.
Witherspoon.
It starts with a W. Michael...
Winslow. Ah, yeah.
We beat him to the...
You did.
Actually, we beat the speed at which Keith could look something up.
You got to start typing faster. So, yeah, Dick Mills is going to be there. And then who else did they announce?
Bernard Horsfall.
Oh, not the one.
Yeah, this is great. Sean has visited the site as we're sitting here getting ready. We're going over show notes and everything. And Sean's on the site. And he starts scrolling up. And he says, Bernard. And he goes... And he scrolls up a little more and sees Horsfall and goes, who's this guy? He thought it was
Bernard Cribbins.
Oh, which would have been awesome.
Oh, Grandpa Wilf. Which apparently he's starring in a CBS
show. They could have dropped three or four other people if they'd have brought Bernard.
I'd have had to ask for a hug.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I know this is creepy and you're only doing autographs, but can I get a hug, Grandpa Wilf? I bet he'd give me one.
I think he would.
I'm sure he would have.
But Bernard Horsfall.
Hopefully
we're saying his name right too.
I think so. I don't want to diminish him because we've talked about Bernard Horsfall and how cool he is before on the show because he's done
Deadly Assassin.
He was Chancellor Goth.
He was Terron in Planet of the Daleks, Gulliver in The Mind Robber, and the first Time Lord in the War Games.
He was a stranger in The Mind Robber.
He was a stranger too before he was the Gulliver.
Before he was Gulliver.
Not only just him, Julian Holloway, who does a lot of background work in Hollywood, but his...
And voice work.
Voice work. Whose contribution is Sergeant Patterson in Survival. Yay. And another new Who actor, Richard Hope, who appeared as the Silurian Malok. Isn't that right? Malok. In Hungry Earth, Cold Blood, The Wedding of River Song, and the Silurian Blato in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
Which explains why we thought he looked familiar.
Yeah. I think we determined that when we
watched the same actor.
When we reviewed that.
We did, yeah.
But hey, that's kind of a cool...
Another Silurian.
That almost, not quite, almost makes me rethink my autograph picture for Madame Vestra. Because the same actress played the...
both.
Well, yeah, she's played all the women, Silurians, basically, in the...
She played both
in
sisters.
But she played both sisters in Cold Earth, Hungry Blood, so there's probably a great photo of her and Malik together that I could get those two autographs on. But I got to have her as Madame Vestra.
almost makes you rethink.
It almost makes me rethink it. I liked this
guy.
I've
enjoyed him. I've enjoyed him.
He's a great addition. So, go Galley. Cool.
The other bit of news was that the Project Motormouth convention happened this weekend. So if any of our listeners were there and want to send in reports for next week, please do. Because this had it. I was jealous. Quite the lineup of who actors.
It's unfortunate that it had to come together and
for the
reasons that it did.
Yes.
But it's awesome that it did come together and that they had the... will you stop it?
Can't keep it from buzzing. It's making me mad.
It's your earbud.
No, it's this. Because every time that I adjust it, it stops.
Thank you, Jigger, bud. Anyway. So,
anyways.
They had what? All.
Well, let's see. It was David Tennant, Sylvester McCoy.
Paul McGann.
Hang on.
There's the photo.
Oh, my silly thing just.
That does look like the dress.
Doesn't that look like the same dress?
I bet it is.
Yeah, I bet it is the same dress. I think you're absolutely right.
We were discussing, there's photos floating around online of some of the things at the convention. There's a great photo of David Tennant sandwiched between Paul McGann and Janet Fielding, who were both on microphones. And Janet Fielding appears to be wearing the same Tegan dress from last week's The Awakening. It's paint splotched. So.
I bet it is.
Come on, come back.
I think the other one had a little more white to it, but it's still very much in the Tegan vein.
All right, it was.
So apparently that wasn't her.
David Tennant, Sylvester McCoy.
Just dressed herself.
David Tennant, Sylvester McCoy, Paul McGann, Peter Davison, and Janet Fielding. Colin Baker was delayed by work commitments, according to this article. Which makes it sound like maybe he was there. Yeah, attended to sign autographs later in the afternoon. So he was there. That's why he's not in this picture with the four of them. Five of them. And then...
friend of the show, Simon Fisher-Becker, was there.
Simon Fisher-Becker was there.
John Leeson. Nick Briggs.
It's funny to
Gareth Jenkins.
It's funny to see this photo of David Tennant at the thing. Because I've seen the other doctors at various things. And I've seen Paul McGann up close. So that doesn't surprise me that Paul McGann kind of has that 5 o'clock shadow thing going on. But David Tennant, man, he looks like he's slumming.
Yeah.
He's really... He did not clean up for this.
I thought he has been for a while.
Makes me wonder if he's growing that for a role.
It could be.
So apparently he's not coming back for Fright Night Part 2.
You guys heard that they're doing a Project Motormouth 2 now.
No, I didn't.
Project Motormouth 2, The Companions.
Oh!
And slated now to attend Katie Manning, Louise Jameson, Sarah Sutton, Janet Fielding, Annika Wills, Deborah Watling, Bonnie Langford, Nicola Bryant, and Sophia Aldred.
Wow.
So that's really cool that they're doing something like that. Next up is
feedback.
Was that it? That was the intro?
How about feedback? It's
next
time
up
for some feedback.
Thank you.
With Sean.
Are you ready for this? Ready? Hang on the edge of your seat. Out of the doorway. Here comes an email.
Oh, where's my camera? Go away.
This is doomed. Doomed, I say, from day one.
I thought maybe it was disco lighting. All of a sudden I saw this light come across my face.
And another feedback to read. Hey, this email comes from you. Another feedback to read.
That sucked. Stupid. Why did my camera come on?
So it's... there was this flash, and I was like, oh, wow, we're getting all disco and everything in here.
No, maybe it got excited.
Apparently this entire episode just filled with gremlins.
So, more Queen this week.
I like it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
What else is there?
There is no other music.
All right. Well,
I want you guys to know you totally eschewed my original plan. My original plan was I was going to walk through all the classics of the 70s, but then we kind of got into the Queen rut, and it's kind of like, well,
that wasn't my fault.
That was him.
But two Queen songs in a row. How could you not?
All right.
What else could you possibly follow up the Flash Gordon theme with?
And then how can you follow up Bohemian Rhapsody with anything else but Queen? Yeah. Everything else is going to be pale in comparison.
To be quite honest with you, another one bites the dust. Not really Queen's best.
He had technical issues with the song to begin with.
Yeah, that's true.
Stupid iTunes.
I'd like to sing Sympathy for the Devil.
That is a good song.
See? He could have branched out, but you locked him into Queen, so now he feels compelled to come to Queen.
He shouldn't have come with Queen the second week.
The Tenth Doctor musical that you posted, I finally watched.
Isn't that awesome? Isn't that awesome? Oh, I'll put the link in the show notes.
You should put the link in the show notes in case somebody hasn't seen it.
I just posted it on
Facebook.
Facebook, yes.
Which, if any of our listeners out there don't know this, we have a, obviously we have our website, we have travelingthevortex.com. We have a Facebook page.
We do.
Which is facebook.com/travelingthevortex.
Oh, that's right, we do.
And we all have Twitter accounts as well.
Yes, we do.
And as does the show.
As does the show, which is at Travel Vortex. And sometimes we will post things on one or the other, but not necessarily both. So, for example, if I post something on our website, it will aggregate and throw that over to the Facebook page. But sometimes we put things on Facebook that you don't see on the website.
So make sure you're following us on Facebook.
That's the bottom line I'm trying to get to, is make sure that you are following us on Facebook and click that little notification thing so you get all the cool stuff from us, because sometimes there are exclusives.
That's right. Absolutely. Like your wonderful video.
It started there and then went
to the website. Yeah, it ended up going to the website. Yeah, went over.
Well, like the Who Pumpkins.
Which, we did the jack-o'-lanterns. we didn't mention that Sylvester McCoy actually...
Oh, yeah. That could be a bit of feedback.
Soon to be friend of the show.
Hold it! I forgot this cord's shorter, and I was getting the buzz again.
I kept trying to figure out why the mic was getting further away from me. It was just like, why am I moving? Oh, it's falling over. Weird.
That's a good catch.
I'm glad I happened to be paying attention at that moment. If Keith had been talking, we'd have been doomed.
true story.
I'm going to bring my own mic stand from now on, and I'm going to stand in that corner with it.
What do you want?
Yeah.
Better bring a long cord.
So I posted the galley video from last year, because I finally got it edited. And didn't think about it, and then finally decided, you know, I probably should tag Paul Salomov, because... he built the TARDIS console, and that's kind of what the majority of the video is. Mm-hmm. So I tagged him on Facebook, and he immediately saw it. Was weird, because it was like 2 in the morning that I did this, and he saw it and was like, oh, dude, thanks for giving the console love. And I was like, hey, thanks for bringing it. It was awesome. Well, then, of course, all of Paul's friends saw the video, which I should have done immediately. I should have
posted it to his wall.
Should have posted it to his wall immediately. But then all of his friends, so we got this huge bump on people looking at the video. And then one of the comments on Facebook was somebody who said, you're not going to believe this. Sylvester McCoy directed me here.
Through his Twitter.
And then he sent a link to the tweet.
So we went and looked, and Sylvester McCoy had this nice little tweet about, hey, look, this is at Galley. I'll be at Galley. And this kind of stuff. And it was the link to the video. So I have no idea where Sylvester saw
McCoy
it,
visited our Facebook page.
Yeah. So if it's good enough for Sylvester, you ought to be visiting the Facebook
That's
page.
Right.
So there.
But all right.
The whole fanboy squeal went. And what was weird is I looked at that, and I looked at that link, and I clicked on it, and it went to Sylvester, I mean, the Sylvester McCoy's Twitter page with his thing, and I was like, oh! And then my phone chirped, and I looked down, and it was Glenn sending me a text at like 7 something in the morning. Holy crap, did you see Sylvester McCoy?
And I woke up groggily in noon. What?
Why did Glenn tweet me at 7:30
Sylvester
in the
morning? Sylvester McCoy, what? And then it wasn't until I got to work and got online, I was like, oh, that's why.
So onward and upward, friends.
Yes.
Pretty cool.
We'll have to make sure that we get video of Sylvester, and we can go, you remember that video you liked on Facebook? We're making another one. So who's up for... this feedback's from you.
Robert says, comment, question. Got hello
another,
again.
Got another to read. No, that's not how it went. Sorry.
This idea is rapidly spiraling out of control. Who played today?
Who played today?
Patriots. This is like a Patriots pass spiraling out of control. There's a football joke for you. I'm topical.
I'm glad the Patriots lost.
Did they play today?
They did.
Did they lose?
Yep.
They lost. And that joke makes sense.
Totally untimely. Totally timely. The other game was...
Do you only know because of Phil's texts?
The other game was...
pretty much it.
The 49ers beat somebody else.
The Falcons.
Yes.
Because Tony G's out.
Yes, that's right.
Poor Tony G.
Yeah, he's still not going to a Super Bowl, is he? All right.
Can they trade you mid-season?
I don't think so.
Like, now that he knows who's going, can he say, hey, sign me up, I'll come play during the Super Bowl for you? Cause I'm sorry, of all the players that
deserve
a trip to the Super Bowl, Tony Gonzalez totally deserves one. And unfortunately, he played for the Chiefs for so many years.
Yeah. It was the only good thing about the Chiefs for so many years.
Yeah, but I'm sorry. Go ahead and continue with Robert's email.
He says, hello again.
Hello!
I'd have written in last week over the heiress invalid mess, but I was laughing too hard. I won't be able to make it to Planet Comic Con as the artist Ali...
No, you didn't say it right. Harris.
Harris. Sorry.
Invalid.
Harris.
Invalid.
Invalid.
No.
No, you're right. It was invalid.
He said invalid.
He said invalid.
He corrected invalid. Himself to invalid.
Harris and invalid. Invalid. Mess. But I was laughing too hard.
We like to showcase our smarts.
We edumacated. I won't be able to make it to Planet Comic Con as the artist alley table price is on the high side for me. I'm not sure I'd sell enough books, and I may need that time for events for my latest nonfiction book. I do have tables set for two cons this year so far, and I'm working Conquest in KC.
All right. Well, hopefully we will see Robert at one of those cons.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
An iPad suggestion, Wattpad. It's a site for an app for sharing and reading stories. There's Who Fanfic there. I have some of my own work there, and a site that has forums for advice and columns.
Wattpad, Wattpad.
So you guys with iPads, check it out. Is it just me, or does Matt Smith seem to have good chemistry with actresses playing his companions?
Both of them.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we could count River.
Yeah.
This three.
Which River would be almost the bigger obstacle. Because, obviously, Amy, Karen, and Jenna Louise screen tested with Matt.
That's
so you
true.
Knew there was good chemistry there.
That's yeah, true.
That's true.
Alex was
Alex Kingston
predetermined.
Was predetermined
yeah, that's
and preset.
That's true.
He continues with, I'm not a huge fan of Happiness Patrol, but it does have one of the best lines ever in Who. Can't you afford a real gun? That's probably enough rambling and such for now. Yours, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
Spoilers for
we'll
next week,
we'll miss you
Robert.
At Planet yes, Comic Con.
Absolutely. All
next
right,
up.
Next up is Phil. Get the cottage cheese out of your mouth, Sean.
Phil writes...
We're professionals.
No, we're not.
But I played one on TV once.
We never claimed to be.
But I stayed at a Holiday Inn last night.
They start paying us. We'll stop eating during the current podcast.
Is that the condition?
Either that or we'll start eating certain things and start playing those.
Alpo.
Kroger brand cottage cheese. Small curd.
Is that whole or is that 2%? Looks whole. I think it's whole.
4% milk fat minimum.
It usually says if it's not whole.
It usually says if it's 2%.
Yeah.
Grade A pasteurized.
Oh, no, it's 4%.
He's cultured right. Skim milk.
It does say 4%.
I'm eating skim milk? Really?
It's 4%. Well, it says right yeah. here on the other side.
It says 4% minimum.
I guess I assume not 2% was 4%.
2%
was whole.
2% minimum.
But this says skim milk. Skim milk would be less than
that's
2%.
That's the
how
liquid.
They get the cottage cheese.
Ooh.
Skim it off the surface.
I don't think I want it now.
Phil!
Phil writes,
Odd
comment
Duck Phil.
Question. Yeah, this is Odd Duck Phil. Comment question. Hey, Who Peekins? Really only have the one Who-related thing this week, colon. While playing Borderlands 2, anybody here played Borderlands 2 yet? Will you let go of the mic cord?
I'm up to level 15. 14.
They can sit here and listen to the buzz in the background, or I can fix it each time. Would you care for the buzz all the way through?
Why isn't it working?
I don't know. It's just a bad connection for some reason.
You need to plug me back into my original slot.
I probably should, because it's yours and you're in a different port this week.
Opus don't like to be touched. I named my mic Opus.
Read.
Borderlands 2, I'm up to level about 14 or 15.
So you're up to level 14 or 15. I haven't
with
started yet. Glenn, have you?
I haven't started yet. I
haven't started yet either. While playing Borderlands 2, I was
actually lost all my motivation when somebody went back to playing on PS2 or PS3. So
I don't have an Xbox to play Borderlands 2 on.
And you bought that crappy box.
I'm sorry. The one that has a built-in hard drive and never had a Red Ring of Death? Yeah.
And a Blu-ray player.
And a Blu-ray player.
Just
that's what I meant instead of hard drive. It was Blu-ray player.
Just rub it in, why don't you?
And only 2% of the gaming population is playing, but...
Yeah. I mean, Phil, I'm interested. Are you on Xbox or are you on PlayStation?
He's an Xboxer.
Is he?
He's got mad gamer points.
It was so nice sitting down to dinner with Blake, and he invited his friend Jordan and Morgan, and Jordan's a PlayStation guy. So it was so nice to sit down. And they were talking about PlayStation, and he was like, "Yeah, I'm on PlayStation. I don't get the Xbox stuff."
Did you jump up from the dinner table?
I could take part in this one. Finally,
I did get his PlayStation handle.
All right, friends and gamers.
Yes.
Now for the cool kids, we're going to talk about this.
It's still the same game.
No, it isn't.
It's still the same game.
Here's why it isn't the same game. Because this one says Borderlands 2, Xbox 360.
He did not specify.
But that's what it is, which makes it awesome. Yours doesn't say that. Yours says Borderlands 2 POS.
No.
Yes. Because it's playable on the PlayStation only system. You thought I was going to be naughty there, didn't you?
As was the Doctor Who fan.
I have no idea where you're going.
Oh, will you stop with that? I'm supposed next you're going to bring up the Back to the Future. Oh, you can't play that on the Xbox.
I thought that came out for the Xbox.
No, it never did.
It came out on disc, too, for the PlayStation.
It came out on the PC.
It's also a PC version of it.
Yeah.
Whoop-de-doo. Anyway. Exclusives suck. We covered that. While playing Borderlands 2, I was in a large, shiny city where the main bad guy is based. I guess he's trying not to be too spoilerific here.
Thank you.
While walking around, one of the random messages I heard over the loudspeakers called for a moment of silence for the following engineers who had died today. Hartnell, W.
Oh.
Troughton, P.
Oh.
Pertwee, J.
Ah.
Baker, T.
Wow.
I tried to find a link to a YouTube video to show it off, but the only one I found didn't have the best audio. So why bother?
I'm going to have to just wander around that shiny city when I get there just so I can hear it.
Now, for anybody who's not a gamer and doesn't know, Borderlands, I can't vouch for 2, but I'm assuming based on this comment, Borderlands is one of the greatest games ever. Just throwing that out there.
I was lukewarm on it, but it's warming on me.
But it's also, if you are a fan of other stuff, genre-related, there's so many little nods and tie-ins and jokes and things that just all of a sudden pop up at you. And some of, the guns. There's, a bazillion guns in this game. And some of the guns in their description specifically mention something about Planet X from this episode of that show, which you had to have seen in order to get the description.
Or some of the trophies or achievements. Like 21 gigawatts.
1.21
gigawatts.
So it's just full of that kind of stuff. So the fact that they actually have a Doctor Who joke.
That's cool.
On a loudspeaker.
That
does not
cool.
surprise me because it's layered with that kind of stuff. So definitely check it out.
Which, for 2, one of the achievements or trophies is Wilhelm Screamed.
Which I caught in Lockout.
Was there a Wilhelm?
There was a Wilhelm, and we laughed.
It's not as common as it used to be.
Every single time I crack up.
There it is!
Yep.
I get excited. He continues, "Hey, is New Who on yet? How about now? Now? Impatient, Duck Phil. P.S. How about now?"
We wish.
Not yet, Phil. We'll let you know.
Next up in feedback is Chrissy.
Chrissy writes, the subject line, "You'll never work in this galaxy again. Dear Vortex Boys, gosh, if I'd known you guys would play the video during the podcast, I would have sent you this one instead."
Oh, no, I think we just got rickrolled.
We just got rickrolled. Boo.
How long do we want to let this go?
No, really, I'm glad you guys think I'm clever. It's nice to boost my ego. Though I think I'm much more clever in print than I am in person. Just so you're not disappointed when you meet up with me at Galley. While I'm on the subject, that's a vote for the Traveling to Vortex meetup at Galley. I want to give a big internet hug to Brenda. It's tough losing your job. Just know we're all here for you and hope and pray that things get better for you. Absolutely.
Indeed.
And if need be, you can come stay on my couch.
Yes. By the way, Ian Colfer's first name is pronounced Owen. I did the Ian on purpose because it's actually Owen Colfer. He's Welsh. Cymru.
Well, doesn't that just explain it all?
They do funny things with vowels and stuff. Apologies to the Welsh fans in the audience. I'm just calling it as I see it. Though I do highly recommend the Artemis Fowl series. Teenage criminal mastermind goes after leprechauns, and the leprechauns fight back. To be fair, they aren't the kind of leprechauns you're thinking of. Apparently, they're Welsh. It's great.
Oh, the Welsh leprechauns are tricksy.
Oh, boy.
It's great stuff.
They're always after their lucky charms.
They're always after me lucky kumri. It's great stuff. It's a good series to get into if you loved Harry Potter.
Sold.
Oh, I loved Harry Potter.
Chrissy, the ironic thing is we listened to audio pronunciations of what we thought was how to pronounce his first name last week.
We're going to call out a big old fail on Google Translate because it didn't.
Yeah. What? That's where we got the pronunciation for Ewan, or Ian.
Owen. No.
That's where we got it last week.
No.
Yeah.
No.
We had he had audio.
No.
It was shit. It was Scherzo.
Scherzo. That's the one that
we were listening to.
We listened to an audio.
But we did listen to an audio. You're right. I apologize. It wasn't Google Translate.
I don't know where I got Owen or Ian then.
Hang on. Hang on. Glenn is right. It was Google Translate that we used to pronounce Scherzo.
You guys must have listened to it when I wasn't here.
It was another translation, or not a translation program, but we pulled it up and how do you pronounce this?
And I looked at it and said, I have no idea how to pronounce this guy's name.
It must have been before, or I was maybe I was doing something else.
You must have been doing something else.
Okay, because I totally didn't. That was off show, though.
It was off show.
Yeah, no, it was off show, but that's how
we looked it up. We tried.
We did our research. We were trying to be professionals.
You know, I trust Chrissy over the internet.
I do too.
Yeah.
She's a librarian.
Did you just say librarian?
Librarian.
Library.
We can tell that Sean's not.
What?
All right.
I go to the library.
She goes on to say.
You get blueberries there?
No. You get books at the library.
You get libraries there.
You get books at the library.
I'm of two minds with the big finish plans for the 50th. On the one hand, this probably does mean that there won't be any classic Doctors in the televised 50th anniversary, beyond clips of Classic Who episodes. On the other hand, I figure Big Finish should take its due for their part in keeping Doctor Who going through the wilderness years. The Big Finish audios were a huge part of helping people stay interested in Doctor Who when it wasn't on TV, and we probably wouldn't have a 50th anniversary without them. So, I'm good with whatever they planned, and it sounds like it's going to be good.
That's a good point, and a good way to look at it.
Absolutely. And I still think Stephen Moffat's lying to us.
Can always hope for both.
Reviews! Nightmare of Eden. So, is this Doctor Who's version of the Say No to Drugs campaign?
Yes.
Actually, I quite liked this one. It's not my favorite Fourth Doctor story, but it was a good one. It was interesting to see the writers play around with spaceships in the same place at the same time. I thought I'd have a tough time getting my mind wrapping around the concept, but they made it look believable. I will say that the sets and costumes looked a bit campier than usual, but I was strangely okay with it. I mean, Classic Who has its fair share of campiness, but for some reason this story felt more campy than usual. I give it a B+. She's rating. She's a teacher this week. The One Doctor. This was a great story. It was funny and well-written. The idea of a con artist using the Doctor's reputation to cheat people was hilarious, even funnier that it was the Sixth Doctor dealing with it because he has such a huge ego. Mel had some great character moments in this story, too. I guess you can't really have a character just scream in an audio story. It would get really old really fast. But Big Finish gives Mel plenty of productive things to do, which is wonderful. That's all I have this week, Chrissy. P.S. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, la la la. P.P.S. In case you didn't know, that's the definition of a Rickroll.
Which she also includes the Wikipedia link for Rickrolling.
You gonna read it?
Not the whole thing, it's long.
Rickrolling is an internet meme involving the music video for the 1987 Rick Astley song, Never Gonna Give You Up. The meme is a bait and switch. A person provides a hyperlink seemingly relevant to the topic at hand, but actually leads to Astley's video. The link can be masked or obfuscated.
Obfuscated, you got it.
Did I?
Yeah, obfuscated.
In some manner, so that the user cannot determine the true destination of the link without clicking. People led to the music video are said to have been Rickrolled.
I'm pretty sure that he started it. I mean, think about it.
I believe it.
If you were an aging 80s pop star who really only had the one big hit, wouldn't you... You know what?
Yeah, two.
What was the other one?
Aha. So memorable.
He had two. He had two big ones.
I don't think so.
He did.
Maybe for Glenn, the breakdance too.
But it would come to me.
Did you ever breakdance to Never Gonna Give You Up, Glenn?
Come to me. No, that was after my breakdancing years.
Whenever you need somebody?
Doesn't sound familiar.
No, I don't think that
he covered When I Fall in Love by Nat King Cole.
No.
No.
Together Forever?
What is it?
Together Forever?
Together Forever and Ever.
Okay, he had two.
Oh, that's that, yeah, okay. I knew that was that one.
Maybe a third one. But he had two hits, but he really had one big hit.
It's true.
Never Gonna Give You Up was it. Anyway, if you were this guy.
And I would move heaven and earth to be together forever with you. And that's all I remember.
Nothing as big as Never Gonna Give You Up.
Yeah, there's definitely no Never Gonna Give You Up. Thanks, Chrissy.
Thanks for Rickrolling us.
Yeah, you'll never work in this galaxy.
Holly is up next. She writes, "Hey guys, had a busy week last week and was able to send in an email. Love the feedback jingles in episodes 106 and 107. Can't go wrong at all with Queen. Wonder what this week's feedback jingle will be." Well, I'm sorry about that, Holly.
It was phenomenal in my head. In practice and operation... Well, not so much. It was kind of like Google's Translate program.
She goes on to say, "Nightmare of Eden was a really great episode. There were so many twists and turns as to who was smuggling the Varroxxon, along with what the Varroxxon was actually made of. Trist was a rather likable bad guy, no mustache twirling or evil speeches of evil coming from him. There was a couple of times earlier on that I thought he could be the bad guy. And I was thinking to myself, that would be way too obvious. In the beginning, my money was on the guy that was in charge of the other ship, or Trist's assistant. Surprise, surprise, we found out in the end that both the pilot of the other ship and Trist were working together. Note to yourself, trust your gut instincts." Those hippie glasses are always evidence. That was me, not her.
Hey. Your hippie glasses.
They're not constantly tinted. There are transitions, but they're not constantly tinted.
They're not near as small as...
And they're not as small.
Hey, you kind of have hippie glasses, too.
So do you. We all have rectangular shaped, if that's what you call hippie glasses.
Well, yeah.
No, you called them hippie glasses.
He said, okay, fair enough. Touche.
Oh, I know this one. That's French. No, I can't think of
it. You know what's interesting? I never noticed before. You guys don't have frames around the bottom of your glasses.
Yeah, we're wireless on the bottom. Or rimless. Rimless. Wireless. No, there is a wire.
There is a wire. They're all made
if
up.
They were wireless, they'd be really cool. Yeah. You got some anti-gravity lenses. We should develop those.
Mine have little tiny hands that are holding on at the top.
Elves.
Grabbing on your eyebrows. she continues
We've degenerated into silly rather quickly on this episode.
Took some time getting used to not hearing John Leeson's voice as K-9 in this episode.
Or K-8, as Keith has dubbed it.
Accidentally tweeted.
It's because he's different.
Yeah. Well, we decided, you know, K-8. And then, who's it?
It was Brittany.
Brittany asked. She says, does that make him Kate?
Oh.
And I said, then it wouldn't be a dog.
K-9's female, because it'd be Kate.
Holly, however, was able to get past it and went along for the ride. Time to wrap this up. Looking forward to hearing everyone's thought on this story. Holly from Wisconsin.
Thank you, Holly.
Thank you, Holly.
Not Glenn's Holly.
We haven't done that in a long time.
Yeah.
Holly Mac.
All right.
Well. That brings us to Nightmare of Eden. Two spacecraft fuse in a hyperspace collision. Fortunately, the Doctor, Romana, and K-8... K-9 arrived to help, but when a crew member is found clawed by a ferocious animal, It seemed there's something even more frightening stalking the corridors. The answer lies with zoologist Professor Trist and his CET protection machine in a planet called Eden, the home of the ferocious mandrills.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's a good one. This has always been one of my top of the list, Tom Baker's.
Really?
Yeah. Just for the...
It's just a shame it's a K-8.
Just for... That's never bothered me. just for the fact that it's... There's not a dull moment in this. There's sometimes... When you watch Doctor Who, it ebbs and flows. There are sometimes where it feels too long and it feels like it's dragging and then it's just going to move along.
This is very well paced.
It really is. And I absolutely love... I've always liked the chemistry between Tom Baker and Lala Ward. I mean, it must have been their strife offset that really, I don't know, solidified their characters onset. Because they seem to get along. They seem to be... I mean, you wouldn't know that they didn't get along behind the scenes.
Yeah,
because they're really, really good together on screen. It gives Romana equally enough things to do in this as it does the Doctor. I like the idea of trying to sort of steer us in the wrong direction, even though I was like Holly. I kind of from the beginning, when the first time I even saw it, you know, figured it was at least the pilot of the other ship was in on it.
Yeah.
Especially since he happens to be where he needs to be.
Yeah.
When the second mate ends up, you know, steering them off course. So you kind of think that there must have been something set up there anyway, even though the guy was on drugs, and they kind of try to play it off as that he just was, you know, all screwed up on the drugs.
He was high.
Yeah, exactly.
Which and really, how often do hyperspace collisions really happen? I'd never thought of two spaceships colliding before until I watched this episode.
Yeah, I'm like, absolutely.
Why didn't that ever occur to me as being an issue?
I like that it's easily fixed, too. You know, it's not, but it is. You know what I mean? It's not like you have to go in there and, like, unfuse all the metal. You just, you know, basically reverse the process, and then everything's okay. But
only because the one ship was in a different state of materialization.
Yes, exactly.
Now, had that actually been a boom,
would not have happened. I like the idea of taking the approach with the drugs. Because it doesn't feel like, you know, in the 80s we got a lot of stories about, you know, how drugs were bad. The one kid would get on them and, you know, just it would go. This is really a well done, hey, drugs are bad episode.
It's even almost more of a, hey, don't deal drugs either.
Yeah, exactly. But it runs the whole gamut of the drug trade. And I absolutely love the fact that the drugs are, they can't figure out where the drugs are hidden. Well, the drugs happen to be in the mandrels. So that was really cool too. So all in all together, it's a fun story. It's really well done.
Because in human physiology, it made him kind of like blasé and I don't care and, you know, yeah, whatever. And the mandrels got.
But then we also got to see the withdrawal effects.
Yeah,
which was a nice ugly touch.
But the mandrels were very aggressive. I almost wonder if that was were they aggressive to begin with, or was that maybe a side effect of the drugs being put into their system or something.
I didn't get the impression
that the drugs were put into their system. I got the impression that they were the drugs.
Well,
once they became ash, they were the drugs. Yeah, that's what I
and
got.
And so I don't think it was a. I think it's just that was in their nature the whole time, and because they.
Oh, that he's smuggling. He's not smuggling drugs per se. He is actually smuggling mandrels, which is why he has the CET machine, because he doesn't know anything. I never thought of that.
It's like instead of
I'm sorry, I just had an epiphany. That's really new way of looking at it.
Does this episode make even more sense?
Opium, he was smuggling the poppy plants to make the opium.
Well, that because he's got this. I mean, he talked about, you know, to fund the research and to the whole reason behind it was to make the exhibition. What's the word? You go on safari and you were mounting an expedition. That he's mounting this expedition to go and do this, but he needed to pay for it. But it makes so much more sense as to why he doesn't know why this machine does what it does or how it works, really, even though he built the stupid thing. It's because that's...
And why he doesn't really care.
Yeah, it's almost more of a side effect. I needed this in order to be able to transport that. I never thought of that. Yeah.
And the only reason he has the other locations is for show.
Yeah, probably.
It's part of the illusion. Did anybody get the
Carnival of Monsters feel?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The connection between the Miniscope and the CET.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it was absolutely.
They were very, very similar.
It's almost an updated version.
Yeah,
of it.
Kind of, so.
I didn't really have any problems with the story. This, to me, is almost a quintessential, if you showed somebody a Fourth Doctor story and wanted to kind of give them idea of what his entire era is like, this would be a great example.
You get a lot of canine. Get
despite the voice.
You get Lala, and you get Tom.
And just the story. It's a lot of similar ideas that we see elsewhere.
You get a lot of corridors.
A lot of high-minded ideas. Yeah. A lot of, oh, look, the Doctor just happened to show up at the right time at the right place. You get the initial, this is what's going on, but that's not really what's going on, stuff going on. It's classic Doctor Who.
You get the big dressed-up monsters.
Which, I liked the monster
design. Yeah, they were fine. I did see your tweet later, Sean. I didn't think they were anthropomorphized anything. I thought they were very creative.
Are you sure? Because they kind of look like clams.
No, they don't look like clams at all.
If anything, it'd be humanized frogs.
What?
I could see frogs more than clams.
I think you're on the drug that he was peddling.
I don't know. I kind of see
look
furry
anything
frogs.
Like frogs.
Furry frogs.
Furry frogs.
No. Yeah. No. Anyway. It's not like anything like frogs.
I liked Romana in this.
I'm actually a little surprised. I'm pleasantly surprised. I'm a little surprised that both of you enjoyed this to that extent, that you thought it, calling it a quintessential representation of Tom Baker's era, that really I'm kind of floored by.
And
that.
It's something you also, I almost feel like I had a disservice tweeting along to it, because I think there was a lot of nuances there that I didn't catch from by being distracted instead of just sitting down and focusing on the episode itself.
And we had Katrina at one point too, which didn't help because she got a little loud at one point. And I think there was a chunk of dialogue probably during the exposition that we missed in the third part.
But there was a point where I asked, so what happened? And you explained. And I was like, oh, okay. But
I have to be honest. I mean, I enjoy the story. I enjoyed it watching it this time because I don't think I'd seen it since, you know, I'd seen it as a kid. This has never been one of my favorites from the Tom Baker era, and I think part of that might stem from the fact that, quite honestly, it scared me as a kid. I know, you're going to laugh. Yeah, I can see it in your eyes now. There was something about the fusion of the ships and the fog in the corridor and then these things running around.
Sure.
Now, yeah, as an adult, I can go back and go, I can't believe that scared me. But something about the combination of that and just when they had the giant view screen up and all you could see was jungle.
Right.
It was kind of like, oh, don't go in there. I mean, I don't know anything about anything, but don't go. No, that's bad. And then there's a guy in the jungle hiding behind one of the potted plants. And it was, I don't know.
And then occasionally he comes out and runs around the ship.
Yeah.
Which, and
he shot the Doctor, for Pete's sake. Okay, this is not a nice guy.
That's one of the great things about this. It was about the time I was saying, hey, what about all those passengers that we saw in the weird hoods and the glasses?
They go running through.
Very shortly afterwards, we get the giant long chase scene where the Doctor's chasing him, and we deal with the passengers and how they're starting to get irritated about their weight. I don't
see the passengers very often.
No, only a couple times.
Well, if this had been any other, you know, 70s, 80s era science fiction story dealing with a passenger liner, we would have spent a lot of time with the passengers.
Yeah.
Buck Rogers comes to mind. I just finished that show. Because there was a lot of, oh man, really? We're going back to the people and their problems, and I don't care that you're not going to get to your conference on time. And, you know. So there's a lot of that, but not in this one. It's just kind of like, here they are.
And then you almost forget about them, and then they pop back up.
It's funny that Chrissy thought it was a little hokey. Now, we watched just a little bit of the special features after the episode that night, and you know, they kind of commented that the writer was less than, which is another Bob Baker.
This was his last, I think.
It's also the first one that he wrote without Dave Martin. Or the only Doctor Who story he wrote without Dave Martin.
Anyway, but he's kind of made his comments clear that he was not thrilled with the realization of the mandrels and that he thought they were awfully silly looking. But
I didn't have a problem with them.
They commented that
I didn't find them scary, but
somebody commented on that documentary that they mentioned that they thought this was kind of toward the end of the season because obviously the budget was running low at this point. that we're doing that. But what's funny is looking at this story, you know what this reminds me of is Robots of Death. There's a lot of running around on this liner. It's instead of a sand liner, it's a space liner. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of corridor shots, and there's a thing running around on the ship trying to kill people. And so there's a lot of that. And even I tweeted that once again, I see a console in a Doctor Who story, and I'm impressed with the production work because, wow, that's an impressive looking control room.
I would agree.
There's a lot of nifty things in here. And Now, when Tom Baker was chasing the guy in that extended corridor shot and he goes running down the stairs, there was more than one shot of his foot hitting a stair that wobbled as he.
They also did a nice job of reusing that same staircase and not making it look like it was reused.
Yeah.
They did a nice change of camera angle
and some other tricks to try and liven it up a little bit. It's also the first one, I think, that we've come across where K-9's battery didn't come into play, which is surprising because he blasted everything in this episode.
Oh, you mean running down.
Yeah, running down.
Because they actually used him to jump the powers at one point, yeah.
I mean, so many of the canine stories we've watched have been, hey, canine's in it, hey, canine's... Oh, no, canine's starting to drain. Canine's going to have to be dragged for the last episode.
Right.
And, you know, canine can't save us. And in this one, he's kind of all on top of it and like, yeah, I got my energizers in. I'm going. So, what do you think about... I mean, you mentioned that you liked the fact that this was kind of a different take on... the drugs that don't do drugs that they're bad, don't deal drugs that they're bad.
Just say no to drugs.
Just say no, which we haven't really got. I'm trying to think. There aren't many of those.
In Doctor Who,
specifically.
I couldn't think of any other ones.
Not that I can recall.
Yeah. That are this blatantly.
Well, yeah. I think we've had other ones where people have been on something, but not...
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, actually, even now that I've said that, even a new series now.
Yeah,
I don't know that I can.
I can't think of any that are dealt with in such a way.
Hmm.
At least not as the main motivator for the entire story.
Yeah.
Hmm. That's kind of a nice change of pace for Who. Something I always appreciate when any science fiction comes up with a motivation other than just, I want to be evil.
Yeah.
And I want to conquer.
Take over the world.
Yeah, I just want to take over. Anytime any science fiction does that.
Well, it's a money ploy here. Because he needs it to fund his expedition, and the other guy's in on it for money. I mean, it's all a money thing, and it's well done.
What was interesting, too, is I think I agree with Holly when, you know, we talked about who was the bad guy, because I think we kind of all suspected Twist right at the beginning that, oh, I don't trust you, but then, oh, well, maybe we do. Oh, but no, we don't. You're willing to throw your research assistant under the wheel, so you're obviously the bad guy. But then he'd come back and do something that wasn't quite as evil.
Right.
You know, and so they kind of kept me off balance with that.
You off balance at first, because he's the first one to start investigating the thing besides the doctor. You know, he goes and starts asking around, and you think, oh, well, this guy's a pretty good guy, but...
And kind of the same deal with the pilot of the other ship when he first shows up and he's adamant about, you crashed into me and this, that, and that, which
I got to get out of here.
I'm in a hurry. And it's kind of like, I don't like you. But then when the doctor says, well, it's pretty simple. We can reverse the process and go do this. And, you know, we just need to do this. And he's kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll help. And he kind of runs off to go be helpful. And it's like, oh, okay. That's not so bad then. No, he turned out to be a bad guy. So I liked the fact that they were able to keep me off balance with that, because I honestly didn't remember that aspect. I think this is probably one that, as a kid, once the mandrel showed up, I was like, I'm done with this. When that thing comes through the pre-scored wall, it's like,
yeah. I remembered liking this one as a kid, but not being scared, but
well, you are a little bit older.
It was
than I am.
To be quite honest. Yes, that's true.
Bazinga!
Sorry,
but it was one of those ones this weekend. I thought, you know, I was going to put it in last night, and I was going to watch an episode, maybe two, because it was kind of late, and then I was going to watch the rest of it today. And I put it in, and I started watching it, and pretty soon it's over. And I went, wow, okay, I liked that better than I remembered liking it.
Well, so. And there's so much fun to it, too. The Doctor gets so many, I mean, Tom Baker's always good, but he gives so many fantastic lines in this when he shows up and he's claiming to be from the insurance company.
Yeah.
You know, and then the guy does a little bit of research, which I didn't expect, and yes. Oh, they went out of business. And so he confronts him with that, and they went out of business, and without missing a beat.
No wonder I haven't gotten paid.
You know, and just okay, we're back to off kilter again. You know?
And as predictable as it was, the guy hiding in Aiden, I liked the way that turned out.
I did too.
The fact that he was the missing crew member, but he suspected something was going on.
He was also an undercover DEA.
Yeah, that was cool too.
Which that part I didn't expect.
Yeah.
I fully, the missing crew member, yeah, of course, he wandered off and got killed in one of these other places. Oh, look, wait, no, he's still alive. Right. He's playing Tarzan. Oh, wait, no, he's a DEA. Oh,
I was okay. He's looking for the drugs. He needs the evidence.
And that's why he's been missing the entire time. I thought that was great.
I was a little surprised.
Plus, he's playing dead. Yeah. Because they think he is.
Because he's looking for the drugs.
Right.
I was a little surprised that there wasn't more of a romance angle between him and the other research assistant, because I really kind of got, when she's telling her mom,
you really get the impression that's where they were going. Memories, yeah.
That I thought that's where they're going with it, but then that didn't turn out to.
Unfortunately, that was her whole motivation for teaming up with the Doctor in the end.
Yeah.
Right.
So that kind of lessened her character, I thought, because he didn't have any of that.
Right, right.
And she was a great character.
She was a great character. And, then she ends up then eating it anyways.
Well, she comes back. He only stunned her.
Yeah. He says she's not dead. She'll be all right.
That's true.
He does say that.
Yeah. We were hopeful that she didn't die.
And she gets shot in the face and holds her stomach. Did you notice that?
Oh.
The beam goes right here, and she goes, grasps her stomach, fall. And I thought, shouldn't you have grasped your face? Anyway, maybe it made her sick to the stomach. I don't know.
We had...
that stun. Oh.
I'm all topsy-turvy now. A lot of sonic usage in this one.
There was.
Quite a few.
To open things. That's really what he was
properly. Or close.
Yeah, or to close, yes.
Used properly. There was I'm torn on the dog whistle. He goes leading.
The dog whistle to lead,
the
canine was good. To lead the mandrels, and also he used it to activate that laser.
Yeah.
That was a bit much.
What? Come on. I mean, I guess it's better than using the Sonic from Clear Across as a remote control. But
once again, he's, you know, whistle, whistle, whistle. He goes to take a breath, and they get aggressive, and he starts whistling.
That was a good.
Yeah,
it was. It made a little more sense with them with activating the laser.
No,
not so much.
No. And then there's the great Tom Baker biting the weed.
In Eden, when he's biting that root,
he's getting strangled.
Oh yeah. When it starts attacking, or whatever that's it is, right.
Hand me that root.
Anything else really about this?
I think we're grasping at this point. It's kind of a fun little episode, but I enjoyed it much more this time than I did when I was a kid because it scared me. I actually bought it with a little trepidation. I don't know.
Keep a hold of it if you want me to.
No, that's okay. I'm going to put it in the freezer when I get home. We've talked about the Fraggle Rock episode.
Yeah.
If you handed me that and said, hey, do you want to buy that episode?
I don't
think I could do it.
I don't understand that.
My love for Doctor Who got me over.
I don't understand your fear of it. Of course, I was the kid that watched all the other Universal Monster movies, but not The Mummy. And now I don't see what I had such an issue with The Mummy with.
They're kind of lumbering, and they're kind of almost...
I guess I understand.
Somebody called them rejects from The Muppet Show, and they do kind of have that look about them.
A little bit.
But, again, maybe it's just because I'm older and more sophisticated.
Then again, we had Return of the Jedi, so... Those were all rejects from The Muppet Show.
But this came first.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Is when you associate it now, it's like, well, we were all...
Yeah, that's...
Actually, I had seen this after I'd seen
Revenge of the Jedi. Yeah.
So
you saw Revenge of the Jedi?
Or Return of the Jedi.
Wow. Early cut.
Yeah, very early cut. No, I saw Return of the Jedi before I saw this.
You might have, yeah. just by the time it aired in 79, by the time it aired here, you're probably right.
Oh,
probably
yeah, because this was mid-80s by the time I saw this.
But, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know what it was. I had to have seen it earlier than that. I had to have seen it as a younger kid for it to have really... Maybe it was just a weird time. Maybe it was just one of those things that, you know, Home Alone on a Friday night or something, and then all of a sudden it came up at midnight. Like, ah! But
it maybe it was the drug use.
That could be.
I was the drug on the, use
it was called, XYZ, and it was a lot of fun, and it kind of made me not care about stuff. But
I think you meant the drug use.
The drug use in the episode scared you.
Not the drugs you were on.
I didn't care about that.
It was called XYZ.
That's what they call it in the...
not almost.
In fact, there's a mention that the original, they were going to nickname the drug Zip. But yeah. Lala Ward was concerned that that would sound appealing to kids,
right.
So they changed it to some technobabble, Varox, and whatever. But Canine mentions the chemical compound is XYZ, which is where the name comes from.
Oh. Huh. Okay.
Or ZYX or something, but...
I don't remember that.
When the doctor's having him analyze it.
Oh, okay.
Which, good thing.
I do remember him doing that.
Good thing it wasn't absorbed through the skin.
Yeah. Because he's holding it with his hands.
But what is this? Oh, that's rat poison. Oh, it's absorbed through the skin. Oh. We'd had to write off my Time Lord physiology because it's going to make me immune to this. But
all right. So we move on?
Mandrels are scary.
So we move on?
Let's move on.
All right.
When the evil Skelloids launch an attack upon the 17 worlds of the Genarial system, its peace-loving inhabitants face total destruction. So it's fortunate that the famous time traveler in time and space, known only as the Doctor, is in the area. And doubly lucky that with the help of his pretty young assistant, Sally Ann, he manages to defeat the deadly creatures and save the day. But now it looks as though the Doctor's luck has run out. Who is the mysterious curly-haired stranger who insists on causing trouble? What role does the feisty redhead Melanie play in his scheme? And what do they have to do with the sinister alien cylinder approaching Genarios? One thing is certain for the Doctor and Sally Ann, there's deadly danger ahead. Dun dun dun! Dun dun dun! This is one of the funnest Big Finish adventures we've listened to.
I would agree.
I would
totally agree.
And I'm glad that I didn't know what it was about.
Me too.
Because if I'd read that synopsis and had any kind of inkling going into it, this was what the story was about.
It still doesn't give the idea that the fake doctor, Banto, is imitating the doctor for money.
Yeah, but I didn't need to know that. I didn't need to know anything. It was just... They show up and they're like, oh, the doctor saved us. And Colin Baker is like, say what? And just from that launch off point, okay.
For a second I thought, oh, something's going to happen throughout the episode that he is going to save them. They just arrived late and have to go back in time. I thought it was going to be time folding in on itself or
possibly even a future version of the doctor.
Yes.
But then they nix that right away. He goes, no, the hairs on the back of my neck aren't standing up.
For all the things that you guys have said about that, one of my first things when they show us the hand early, where Banto and Sally Ann do this thing when they run off to go get the credits, and they get into their normal cells.
Wasn't that before?
It was very early on. It was in the first episode.
So when that happens,
I thought, oh.
That was the point where I was like, they're imitating the doctor.
Exactly, and that's when you're let in on kind of what's going on here.
Yes.
And my first thought was, they kind of showed that a little too soon. Because I was doing the same thing you guys were. I was going, who could this possibly be? What's going on here? And for all the same things you guys mentioned. But then when they reveal that so early on, I thought, well, where are they going to go with this story now? You know, that was my first thought was.
Well, and then I thought,
Should have been this misdirection through the whole thing. Well, I was thinking at that time that they should have just kept this misdirection on, because I was actually having a lot of fun trying to figure out what was going on here. But then on the flip side, when the story does change, when it does change from that point, and
when it reveals what the real story is.
It ends up being a lot of fun that way, too.
Yeah.
So it's done really well beyond that as well. But my first initial thought was, oh, you're kind of letting me in on what's going on here a lot sooner than I expected.
And so once we got revealed what was going on, I instantly thought, okay, so it's going to take a long time to prove what's going on, and the doctor's going to be obviously he did get thrown in prison, and it's going to take almost like what it was for the first episode, the entire season, the entire story, to prove that the doctor's the doctor.
Right.
But then the cylinder shows up, and that's all out the window.
It's all out the window. Well, but he still hasn't proved himself to anybody.
No.
Except for Pantos and Sally Ann.
Which comes fully back around perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderfully.
I said this to you.
I love when they throw him. We've talked about throwing him in jail. I love when they're like, you can't do this to us. We at least need some food. And the guys go, well, there's a dispenser there in the corner.
Because you imagine
it's like some dungeon, and there's like bars on the wall and gritty, dirty walls. And then it just totally paints a picture when a guy says, well, you know, there's the dispenser in the corner.
Dispenser.
And then suddenly it's just this white waiting room, you know, is what you suddenly picture. You go, oh, it's not really prison. They put them in a room somewhere.
It was probably called the Great Holding Cell of Genarius.
I got the impression it was the green room is what it was, where you go before you go on stage.
Well, and then to go further, oh, we can use that dispenser to get out. I didn't realize you meant by using it as a battery.
We were all expecting him to rewire something, and I even got that, but you don't have the Sonic to help you with that, do you, Doctor? And then the next scene. Got a battery ram our way out the door.
This isn't what I thought you meant.
I said this to you, Glenn, earlier in the week, that Gareth Roberts seems to be channeling Douglas Adams in this story. Just in the silliness of everything.
You can tell from a lot of things that Gareth does that he's a huge Douglas Adams
he's
fan.
Inspired.
And this is very, very in the vein of Douglas Adams.
Very much.
It doesn't go quite as far as feeling like Hitchhikers in the comedy. But there's echoes and shades of it there.
I laughed more in this than anything else.
Yeah. What's wonderful about this story is it's Doctor Who steps aside and doesn't take itself seriously. And it makes all the little tropes, like Sally Ann. I mean, that's clearly Sarah Jane. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though it's Mel's the companion at this point. But they clearly, from the archives, got Sarah Jane and turned it into Sally Ann. So I absolutely loved that.
And speaking of companions, I really liked Mel in this story.
Yeah, she's used right. She has something to do. You know, her part makes sense in this one.
Maybe that's the thing. As I've seen two episodes or two stories with Mel, and she's given nothing to do, and all she does is scream.
Yeah,
and this they realized her. And if I hadn't have seen those other two, I'd be like, why don't people like this character?
Yeah.
She's fantastic.
Everybody seems to get second chances to kind of develop their character in Big Finish. Does anybody get that impression?
Yeah.
That they really get a chance to kind of expand on...
Let's do this right.
Right. What they were...
I'm really looking forward to Tegan's chance.
Well, here's an even deeper thought. What if I don't know if they... I imagine they probably couldn't ever lure him out, but what if Big Finish managed to find a way to lure Matthew Waterhouse and did some Adric stories?
They tried. In fact, there is an Adric story.
Oh, is there? Yeah. Well, there's one that he doesn't portray. It's not Matthew Waterhouse.
Exactly. There is one Adric story, and they actually, I think they approached Matthew Waterhouse, and he showed no interest in doing it, so they got another actor.
I think he would be very obvious that it's time has passed.
Well, yes. They certainly couldn't do a young Adric story.
Yeah. I don't know how they'd make that fit otherwise.
And not that I'd want to see one or listen to it in this case, but just from the what if possibility standpoint, that if everything that we've been exposed to from this kind of wonky JNT era of Doctor Who, that when things maybe weren't working so well, and Big Finish has turned around and made it gold, could they have taken something like Adric and fixed it? Because I know a lot of people bag on Mel, and quite honestly, I've never really minded Mel. I never thought she was the greatest companion in the world, but I never hated her. But, man, there are some Adric stories that I just cringe, because I just don't like his character at all.
See, and I don't think this story would have worked on television.
No, I would agree. I would agree.
Yeah, no, I don't know that you could do it visually.
The thing is, this was really early on, though. This was like episode 20, I think, wasn't it?
27.
So this is relatively early in Big Finish's run. But I think the thing that maybe surprises me the most is that, or I think works for them the most, is the fact that maybe at this point there's been so much classic Doctor Who, and this kind of includes itself in classic Doctor Who, that they feel like the catalog has gotten big enough, they can kind of step out and say, okay, we can do something a little different.
We're going to do something with tongue firmly planted in cheek.
And it certainly works. And I think this was their first outing of doing that. And I think this is what allowed them to kind of make the leap and then later down the line do Doctor Who and the Pirates, which is quite different in itself. So I really appreciate them for attempting this, and I appreciate it for working. Because it does. It stands on its own.
It could have gone really so wrong.
It really could.
When you look at the balancing act that they're doing between making this very funny and very Douglas Adams-like and the pratfalls and disaster that could have happened had they not managed to pull it off. But they do. They pull it off beautifully.
And they set us up ready. They set us up for all of this in the beginning when the doctor's talking about this society we're in now and how luxurious it is for everybody. That totally sets up everything that happens in this story.
Oh, absolutely.
And it lets you go, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You buy it.
Because that's just the way that the society is.
That's
just the way they are.
I thought you were talking about they set us up at the beginning with Colin Baker's maniacal... opening monologue.
Sounded very much like the Master, didn't
it? You know what? He convinced
me. Turns out they're playing... Monopoly.
I have you now, and he's going on and on and on. It's like, I want Colin Baker as the Master now. Because I really thought for sure that's where we were jumping right off with the Master doing something.
Right.
I had no idea it was Colin Baker. That was Colin?
I identified him as Colin. But.
So now, here's one of the things I got to bring up. I've been waiting long enough to talk about this, and Spare Parts is another one of these. When Dalek... came out. You remember the episode Dalek in the new series?
Yes.
Everybody kept saying, well, it's kind of a retelling of Jubilee, which is also a big Finnish audio. And I took that for granted because I still have to this day not listened to Jubilee. So I didn't know. So I assumed that that's what it was. And then what happened was the Cybermen two-parter came out in David Tennant's first run season in the second series. And everybody
Age
kept saying,
Age of Steel and
Rise of Cybermen. And everybody kept saying, oh, well, this is essentially just Spare Parts, which it's not. It is not. And I kept shouting at the message board saying, this is not Spare Parts. It has many, 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 many tiny, minute parallels, and that's it. It's not anything like Spare Parts. And then suddenly, when the other Doctor came out,
The next doctor.
When that came out, everybody kept and I'd heard this by then too, and everybody kept shouting, "Oh, this is just one doctor." Are you kidding me?
No,
this is nothing like the next doctor.
People compared the next doctor to the one doctor.
Yes, they were making parallels. Well, it's already been done. It's already been done.
No,
it's not. Now,
okay.
The first 10 minutes of that episode, you think maybe that's where they're going with it, but it turns out being absolutely nothing like that.
Which I thought of
you
that.
You think he's an imposter on purpose, but he's not.
I thought of that going into this, that, this is where they got the inspiration for the next Doctor. And maybe they did get the inspiration from it.
Yeah.
But
if anything,
it separates itself enough. The idea, just alone, that somebody's impersonating the Doctor to make money.
Yeah.
Is enough of a departure from anything we've ever seen or heard.
If anything, the next Doctor I could see maybe being culled from Minuet in Hell before I could see it being pulled from this, just from the standpoint
that
one guy honestly thinks he is the Doctor because of this genetic transfer.
Right.
But no, that has nothing to do with it.
It's hearing stuff like that that makes me dislike fandom.
So, yeah.
These are the people that were upset over Russell T. Davies. They're upset over Steve Moffat. They just don't like it anymore.
I literally would yell at my computer screen because I'm not going to respond to that. I'm not actually going to write that in there. But I would literally yell at the Gallifrey forums and go, what are you talking about?
They're all 12. And they want David Tennant back.
Apparently.
I don't know. I can't fathom that. This story, Just one after another, not only with the jokes, but the emotional highs. And I was a little concerned when all of a sudden we were given a quest. Let's go get the three great treasures of Generios. And I'm like, it's the keys of Marinus. You were going so good, and then you had to go to Marinus. And fortunately, that's where it stopped. Because then it became, yes, it was the quest, but it was still, it kept that level of entertainment and tongue-in-cheek and tone throughout the whole thing. Where even though we suspected there might be danger in a few of these instances, there really was.
There wasn't that much.
Right.
The biggest danger was more the robots than anything else.
Well, that's just it. Even when we got down to the, oh, I remember now, that there's, you know, flesh-eating robots or something on the planet, and I kind of thought, in a furniture factory? I'm going to bank on not so much.
I love that. Anybody else think of number five?
No.
Their catchphrase was
circuit?
Disassemble.
Oh, no.
That was just a, we're making fun of the Daleks.
No, disassemble. No, disassemble.
I didn't go there.
I went there.
They reminded me of the two robot henchmen from Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. We're very cross with you.
Yes.
I could see that. Yeah.
The shovel's been finished.
And hell, Mel figures it out, and where, Banto is like, what?
Yeah. That's where Mel shines.
That because, is where she
and
shines.
And when she finally suggests, well, they don't know what it looks like finished either. We'll just stack these extra parts on here and convince them we're done. I thought, that's
and
genius.
It works.
I think I have a few shelves in my house that may just
look, the shelves of infinity.
They may just look like that. There are a few extra parts.
And then I heard shelves of infinity, and I thought, oh, I want that bookshelf.
But you'd never be able to get it done.
I don't care.
Couldn't put anything on it.
As long as I get several shelves going and just so I can put stuff on it and then keep it going upward, just the concept of it, I'm like, I want that.
It's a never-ending bookcase. Never-ending bookcase. Banto. Oh, man. I was vaguely disappointed. Because when he first comes on the scene and he's doing his, you know, his shtick as the Doctor, honest to goodness, I thought it was Rowan Atkinson.
He did sound oddly familiar.
I got real excited, and then I went and looked, and it wasn't Rowan Atkinson, and then I got disappointed. And it's not that the guy did a bad job because he was that good. I mean, he was a phenomenal, very funny portrayal. But I was a little disappointed that it wasn't actually Rowan Atkinson, because that would have been cool.
that would have been
so cool. But his chasing after Mel. And then Sally Ann having the same reaction with the Doctor. And he gets the, well, here, put your hand here and here. You know, you've got two heartbeats. And we go on with the whole rest of this exposition, and 10 minutes later he's like, you can take your hands away now. You know, everything.
That, and the weakest link bit, too.
Yeah.
Was fantastic.
Did you guys happen to listen afterwards?
Yes.
Did you listen to all of the...
No, I didn't.
Oh, my gosh. It goes on and on and on.
They're at the end of the episode.
I queued up to try to find that quote about that I use in the open about my suspicious circus. And my iPod was acting up, and I was like, okay, I'll just let the theme music run out, then I'll restart the episode. And then that started, and I was like, oh.
4 minutes.
Look what I missed. Odd seconds. Oh, it was more than that one. No, it was seven.
Maybe it was seven.
I think it was more like five-ish.
Mm-hmm. All the blabbering that was going on just in the background hilarious. When the Doctor and Sally are talking, turns out, is not just blathering. It's actual, you know, question and answer going on.
And so, I knew one of the answers.
The,
I Will Survive.
I Will Survive, Gloria Gaynor.
but the one that stuck in my head was, what do the sponges worship? The Great Loofah?
The Great Loofah.
And I loved that there were some fantastic fake questions. Or not fake questions, but trick questions. Like you would get, you know, like who's buried in Grant's tomb? And things like that. And she says, what was the Great War of this about, and he's like, well, it was that, and it's not at all what the Great War is named after,
right,
you
right.
know, it's just, what? And then you think about it and go,
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Or how long did the 7 years war last? 6.5 months. You're correct. We're really bad at naming things, aren't we?
And how, just the idea behind the computer is such a cool idea.
Yeah.
Of
the fact that you've got little researchists in another universe that look this stuff up to give him to deliver the answer so that they can go anywhere at any time.
When the doctor presents the question, and then he reveals, yeah, remember that guy who was hanging on the wall next to you? One of my guys. I was like, oh, brilliant.
That's wonderful that he warns him. He says, no, you don't, you know, don't do any ones of those trick
don't
questions.
Don't do any of the tricking,
you
know, the computer
because
stuff.
I'll be able to answer those.
Which, and that's what Sally Ann's ends up getting.
Well, it's not even the trick answer. It's just it's the answer that's unanswerable. You know, what don't you know? Well,
I would have considered that in one of the trick questions, but it fits perfectly.
Yeah, it would totally fit.
And then
she says, what don't you know? Is that your question? Well, yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
The doctor figures it out. Yeah, that's your question.
And then there's the jelly.
That was the most Douglas Adams thing in this story.
I think so, yeah.
Which...
No, the most Douglas Adams thing was the fact that the jelly wasn't going to run off and turn the protection system on the diamond off because he had a delivery that was coming.
And the delivery came.
And you know how, as soon as you go off and you do something else, that's when they show up.
Well, that's 10 minutes. It's infinitesimal. Still showed up.
It's a fly trying to get their attention.
I wondered where we were going with that because all of a sudden there's this zzz, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, here's yet another one of those Big Finish audio traps. We're going to fall into it. Now, this is where we're going to get the peril. We've had fun for 2.5 episodes, and now we're finally going to get eaten by bugs or something and the buzzing, and they're cueing me into it, and I started to get angry again.
It was UPS.
There are creatures from the Ratchet and Clank game that are, I think they're called plasmoids. That's exactly what I pictured. You shoot them in the game, they split in two, and they multiply because they look like they're jelly. And they're green. And that's just exactly what I pictured.
I love the fact that he talks like he has no teeth. Well, you've gone down to do the thing.
No teeth,
you know,
so.
And it's like, totally, that's
fortunately.
And the idea that it shows up, eats the doctor, and then goes off, and they're like, what? And that's the cliffhanger. And they come back, and he's like, oh, I've got green goo all over my coat.
Digestive juices. That's fantastic.
And then... Why did he sing?
Yeah, the little song.
Oh, I'm a unhappy jellyfish. It's like, what?
Oh, wow.
Is that one of those, okay, that was a great take, and nobody heard him? He's alone in the audio recording booth, standing around, and started just singing to himself, and they thought we're leaving that in. You know?
Oh, wow.
Not to mention the indignity of traveling around in a porta potty.
Oh, the fact that they added the noises, the stubbornness. It was just a toilet flushing.
But it was doing the TARDIS groan, but it was doing it in gurgling flushes.
That was when I was like, oh, wow, they're going there. They're going all out.
It's a port-a-loo.
All bets are off
at that point.
Oh, wow.
I do have a problem with this episode, believe it or not. We get to the end, and we've satisfied the Great Cylinder with the three great treasures of Jenarios. And convinced him that the doctor is actually the Banto is the doctor. And that he's going to be carted away to be tortured and killed because, you know, well, naturally, there's at this stage in history when everything's knowable and there's nothing ever to do anymore, the legend of the doctor still lives on and he must be destroyed.
Right.
And the doctor makes an offhand comment about, I suppose I'll have to go rescue him at some point. Now, for some reason, it's easy for my mind to rationalize that, yes, they do, in fact, go and rescue Banto after they leave. However,
Nothing is said about...
They go back to the Monopoly game, too.
Well, nothing is said about the treasures. Now, the Shells of Infinity, probably not a big loss.
Well, wait.
I got the impression there
was just
kind of
a ruse.
Left
they just left him there.
Oh, they did leave him there?
Yeah,
oh,
the Great Cylinder just left it. It was... He just made...
Specifically for the Doctor.
He specifically wanted to use those devices because only the Doctor could have completed
it. I just assumed he took them, too.
No, they were still there. They were still there in the room with the whatever the indigenous people.
Okay, well, good. Then I don't have any problems with
that. Yeah, no, I get the impression it was just left there. Reveals itself as a bounty hunter,
essentially. It was a trap for the Doctor. I got that part of it. But I just assumed he took the other stuff as well.
I thought the
loss of the diamond, okay, that's a huge deal, but you can let that go. The Shells of Infinity, not so much a big deal. But the computer that knows everything about
something wrong
everything,
with the computer,
that's kind of a... Well, but just because it was disconnected doesn't mean you couldn't plug it back in.
They keep calling it... Was it Atmos? They kept
Manos
it.
Or something.
Mentos.
Mentos! The fresh maker.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. But, yeah, the loss of that, if that had fallen into the wrong hands, I was mildly concerned.
Which, the resolution... I know there was a bit of dialogue between the Doctor and Mel of, well, I don't know, I haven't encountered this cylindoid people yet. Did you guys get the impression that it's not the Doctor they're after? Banto as the Doctor swindled this race?
No, I get the impression it's something that the actual Doctor did.
Or will do.
Or will do, yeah.
I just came away with it thinking, it's Banto getting his just deserts for scamming other people.
It is Banto's getting his just deserves for scamming others, but not specifically who came looking for him.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because if you put the Doctor up for a task that only the Doctor could complete, you know the Doctor well.
I could see that.
If it was just Banto's, that they would have... It wouldn't have... They would have known they had a con man, and it wouldn't have worked for them. Yeah.
Okay, I can see that.
I'm a lonely gentleman.
Anything else about the story?
It's a wonderfully fun story, this is like the second time I've heard it, and I could even listen to it again, because it's just a lot of fun.
High marks to Big Finish.
Absolutely.
And Colin Baker.
Just so you guys are aware... Apparently, this was released and is considered the 2001 Christmas special.
Ah, all right.
Well that explains a little bit of the
of the humor and the lightheartedness.
That we can pull this off, and people won't take it too seriously because it's the Christmas release versus, you know.
It was released December 2001.
The Stardust. I forgot about that. We didn't mention the Stardust. They call theirs the Stardust.
Oh my!
We got a mention of the Quarks.
That's right, we did.
Keith would think that was a good addition.
What do we have coming up, and hopefully we can make it to the end without more crackle?
Quarks are never a good addition to anything.
As much as it's referenced, I think you guys would at least recognize the importance in the history of Who, of the Quarks.
Yeti are referenced and are important.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not.
Well, they are now.
So are Zygons.
Yeah, they are.
They're referenced a lot. I have no proof that they're important.
Not yet. It's coming up.
I still think it's highly...
Speaking of coming up, next on the schedule, Sylvester McCoy. Soon, hopefully, to be friend of the show, Sylvester McCoy.
Yes.
At the very least, referencer of the show, Sylvester McCoy.
he currently already is.
Well, that's why I said currently referencer of the show, Sylvester McCoy. The Happiness Patrol...
Yay.
Finally.
I'll have to make it this Friday.
Yes, you will.
Yay.
We're doing that for Friday Night Who on the 25th. We'll be discussing that episode along with another Big Finish story. Big Finish number 25, mainline. Colditz.
Which was an actual place. In World War II.
Cymru.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like Anschutz.
Which Doctor is this?
In the Big McCoy? Finish? It's also McCoy.
It's also McCoy. Okay.
It's also referencer of the show, Sylvester McCoy.
And it also stars an actor who played the 10th Doctor.
Oh, it's
this
story.
Is the one with David Tennant.
And speaking of David Tennant, a little February love, because on the 1st of February, we will be doing, for Friday Night Who, loving monsters. So I know there are some listeners out there that are like, oh my God, you're doing Happy Mr. Troll and loving monsters back to back?
It's only fitting.
But I happen to like loving monsters, as does Glenn, as does Keith.
That's right.
So, on all you. But the reason we're doing that is because we have some very special stuff, because we've already reviewed Love Monsters, obviously. We have some very special stuff planned for episode number 110 that week, and so we won't be reviewing anything, because we're going to be doing other stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to divulge what. You'll just have to wait. And then we're getting into our lead-up to Galley.
Have we figured out what we're doing the Friday you guys are going to be gone?
We have. Well, I'll just go ahead and run through it then.
I'll schedule, be sleeping.
We'll be sleeping.
Probably will be sleeping.
Slackers.
I'm leaving here at 4 a.m. Friday to get to the airport to leave by 6. And then I will be flying all day long
to get there by 1. Are you with us Friday night?
It's as late as I can, earlier. But the thing is,
I'm not talking about Friday night. Who? I'm just talking about partying.
Yeah, well, that's the problem is because midnight here, even
it's
though
it's 2
even
there.
Though no, it's not.
It's 10.
It's 10. Yeah. Yes. So yeah, it's.
But I will have been up since 4 o'clock. So even though it's 2 hours earlier and it's only 10 o'clock, I'll be struggling at that point. So
well, I'll just make sure to hold down the fort.
We'll pump him
for Friday night.
We may or may not be participating in that. I don't know. Maybe I'll just schedule the Traveling the Vortex galley party for 10 o'clock Friday night and force you to be awake.
How about 10 o'clock Saturday morning? We'll have breakfast. A breakfast get together.
That might not be bad. Anyway, we'll
do that unless too. You're buying brunch with the guests, and then
no, I'm not doing that.
That's Sunday.
So we've actually got so after Love and Monsters, the next Friday night, who on the 8th of February is the Leisure Hive with Tom Baker, because I was in a Romana mood, so we're going to do that one.
That one's on Netflix.
It is on Netflix. Yes, so if you have Netflix, you can join us for the Leisure Hive at midnight on the 8th.
Didn't we do the Leisure Hive?
No, the other one, Dr. Hubar. Did Leisure Hive.
Oh, they did. That's right. Okay.
And I happened to join in for that one.
Okay.
So I will have seen it recently.
That's why you think it.
But we're going to do it. It's our turn. So
okay.
We're going to do Leisure Hive.
Very good.
And then we're going to pair that up with Big Finish number 35, Ish.
Ish, yeah.
Ish.
Ish.
Another Paul McGann, right?
No. I think that's 6th Doctor.
Oh, it is 6. You're right.
I think it's Colin. And then the Week of Galley, which Glenn and I may or may not be attending the Friday Night Who that night. Keith, for sure, will be watching Good Man Goes to War with Matt Smith.
Right.
And we chose that because...
Possibly Let's Go Hitler afterwards.
And he may possibly continue
everybody from Good Man Goes to War is going to be there.
Because
with
everybody.
The exception of Simon Fisher.
Friend of the show, Simon Fisher.
And now, Arthur Darvall.
Oh, yeah. Well, Simon's in good company now. But he's.
Yes.
I still feel weird about that.
I should bring Simon.
He wasn't invited, which is
all right. Is that it?
Our show that week will obviously be about Galley. And then we'll be doing
Reign of Terror. Which will slightly be late.
Yeah.
It'll be slightly late
that week. And then the next two Friday Night Whos, we'll be doing Reign of Terror with William Hartnell, which releases on DVD the week before Galley. We're going to wait until the next week before we start reviewing it. So one of us has to
break it up.
So. And we will be breaking that one up. So we'll do the first 3 episodes, and then we'll do the second 7 episodes. But
that's the one that's been animated, right?
That is the one that's been animated, so we're looking forward to that.
Animated.
Are there any aminals in here?
Emanated? Is it kind of like laminated?
Emanated.
You emanate things at the library. Because we're breaking Reign of Terror up,
watching it in February.
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 February. The first week. I'm going to get through this. We're going to stop. The first week when we do the first parts of Reign of Terror for Friday Night Who is a McGann. That's your McGann that
Yay!
You requested. So we'll be doing the next two McGanns in the Divergent Universe story, The Natural History of Fear.
And we really don't have to go this far out.
Twilight Kingdom.
No one's going to remember.
And that'll take us
now I'm going to get back to Mario Galaxy.
That's right.
So more Big Finish on the schedule.
Cool. All right, well.
And some Paul McGann to listen to as we travel.
If that's going to do it for this week, until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
Bzz, I'm Keith.
And this is Buzz. He's here again.
Hi, Buzz.
Cheers.
Bye, Buzz.
Be seeing you.
Good night, everyone.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.